Good morning. How are you? I hope you're having a fantastic day. It is a beautiful, cloudy bullshit day here in Northern Illinois, and we're going to kind of go off the rails. Last week you heard an interview that I had with Kryn from Bloomchick in Tennessee. So much really wonderful feedback. You guys loved our very candid and very real conversations. And this week, I actually have one of my very dear friends, Megan, from New Hampshire here. Megan has had a ton of history and experience with the horticulture industry from many different facets. And I thought that this would be a really great time for us to talk about some things that are going on in our worlds, her world, kind of a change of pace for her in life. Very excited for her. And I think that this is going to be good for everyone involved. So, good morning, Megan.
Hi, Drew.
How are you?
I'm pretty good.
You came to visit us.
I got here Sunday and it's Wednesday.
It is.
So I've been here for a few days now.
Yes, absolutely. You've kind of been hands-on with the crew this week.
Yeah, I got to have an immersive Dahlia Tuber shipping experience. Got thrown right into the mix.
Right into the wood chipper. not overly like traumatic, though.
No, it was really fun.
You don't have to lie.
I enjoyed it.
Okay.
And I feel like... I don't know. I feel like a professional now. Like, a day and a half, and...
Yeah. Because we packed tubers for a day and a half, and then we went down to the greenhouses, and yep. We're working on propagation.
Yep.
With mums and dahlias and things. Mm-hmm. So you kind of got to see, you know...
Yeah, I got a taste of how we do a couple, like, early... I guess it's still early spring.
Yeah.
Processes on the farm, and...
Yep, yep. What was the most interesting thing or most efficient thing that you noticed about packing tubers?
Well, just the entire workflow, like how certain things, like all the boxes are pre-made, right? Yeah. Pre-stickered to the extent that they can be. And like the whole ship station set up with how everything is laid out is like really smart. And I love a good... workflow.
Yes.
So, yes. Like, and I love, that's why I liked doing the shipping, because I got to jump right into that and, you know, like, factory style, you know, just kind of pump through things. But it was, like, really, it was really good. And it was really efficient, because obviously.
A mini Amazon.
Yeah. It's just a mini Amazon warehouse in the basement of your shop.
Perfect. Love it. Okay. So I've mentioned previously that Megan has a lot of previous experience in the hort industry. We crossed paths, I think it was on the internet years
ago. Yeah, we did. We just started following each other.
Yep.
Mutual.
Yep. And then we met for the first time in Denver.
Yep.
In 2018 at an ASCFG conference.
Yep.
And then we hadn't seen each other since then until this spring when I was on the Northeast Loop road trip.
And you stayed with me for a couple days.
Right, was that the last time I saw you?
Yeah. We had not seen each other between Denver and then.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
This past January.
Yep. So that was 3 years?
That's
4 years?
That's five. 5 years.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. 2018 to 2023. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Obviously, we've talked in between then, but we haven't seen each other.
Yeah, yeah. But I think one of... Megan and I just get along really well. We can talk about things. Talk about the industry.
We're on the same wavelength.
Yes. And before... Well, Megan, you grew up in the hort industry from like a nursery perspective.
Yeah.
Right. So let's talk about that.
Yeah. So I came... Well, my parents have always had greenhouses, so that's been a constant in my life. They started a retail bedding plant business, and it was like three tiny hoop houses, right? Everything always starts so innocently. So they had three little tiny hoop houses on our property behind our log cabin. And they were selling retail, and they were doing the farmer's market slog, okay. And they were even doing like flea markets at the end of the year to get rid of stuff. I mean, it was that whole mashup of anything and everything, seeing what sticks. And then they had the opportunity to purchase a commercial, you know, growing business from a retiring couple.
Okay.
And so really what they were buying was like the mentorship aspect of things, mm-hmm. and like the client list.
I see.
We're talking about like wood frame greenhouses. So there wasn't really much infrastructure. I mean, because they were putting it up on our property.
Right.
So there was no like actual physical thing.
Pre-existing. Being,
yeah. So three hoop houses turned into 5 27 by 95 houses. And then they put up a successive house for the next 3 years after that, for a total of 8 houses, about 19,000 square feet of space. And in the like busiest, most jammin' part of the Gilsum Gardens story, my parents were growing for a large grocery chain in the Northeast and serving like 5 to 7 different stores. And then on top of that, there'd be a few independent garden centers. And then like landscapers to a lesser extent. Okay. So, but all wholesale, it's right. All like, you know, we live on a dead end dirt road. We're out in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. We are hustling all of this product out of there. Nobody is coming out to us.
Yep.
People can buy the product locally at our kind of like flagship location grocery store. We partnered with them to put up a greenhouse in their parking lot. So people know of us, but they're not buying from us directly, right. As far as like our local community.
Right. And when did they start that business again?
Well, it'd be 92 or 93.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And you were born?
92.
So this has been your whole life?
Yeah. Is running around in greenhouses.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when did cut flowers come into the realm for you?
So I didn't look at horticulture or running the greenhouses as like a career thing. Okay. It had always been a part of my life. I had stayed living at home, and I was going to college full-time and commuting. I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. I have a background in like equine related stuff through 4-H, so horses were my main thing.
Yep.
And I actually, let's see, I dropped out of college because I decided that wasn't for me. Then I got a job at a barn. Like okay. A professional, you know, that was going to be, I was going to try the horse industry mm-hmm. to see where that led me. Mm-hmm. I made it all of like 4 weeks at this job. It was horrible. And I had been extensively vetted. Like I had done multiple working interviews. Like I had moved, I moved across the state, you know, like I was trying to take this really seriously, and it was just not
working out.
It did not work out. Like it was going to be another dead end job. So I very quickly pivoted, moved home, and then worked in the retail greenhouse at the Hannaford closest to us, the grocery store.
Okay. The one where you had the, yep, got it.
Which I had been managing that end of things. So I managed the retail greenhouse for my parents, selling my parents' product. I immediately jumped right back into that.
Yep.
Like the greenhouse was opening the next week. It was May.
Oh, wow.
So they had me back. They were like...
How old were you at this point?
22.
Okay.
22.
Okay.
Yeah. Because I dropped out of college after my sophomore year.
Yep.
I had done all my gen eds. I had a 4.0 GPA.
Of course you did.
Blew it off.
That's fine.
Yep. So I'm 22 in 2014, I think. Yeah. And so threw myself into retail greenhouse, managed that for Hannaford for another season, and then I got a job at the local farm stand for the summer.
Okay.
Like veggies.
Right.
And that was where I interacted with cut flowers.
And this was not in conjunction or in like the same path as your family? Like this wasn't your family's farm
stand? No. Okay. Friend of the family.
Okay.
Like my friend from high school, her dad had a veggie farm. And so.
I see.
Yeah. Yep. So I got a job working there. Worked with a woman who had been a florist for like 25 or so years.
Yep.
And she was the one that had encouraged me because I was growing zinnias at home at like tall, you know, whatever. I don't even remember the variety, but I grew like this massive bed of zinnias that year. And she was like, oh, you know, you could, florists really can't get zinnias anywhere. Like,
right.
You know, you can sell those. True. Right. And that like really sparked something. And then I spent that fall and winter just like pouring over seed catalogs. I ordered every single thing that was marked as a cut flower. And then that was what circled me back to the greenhouse business my parents had.
Okay.
My parents had just gone through a divorce. My dad retained the business. He was running it himself. And so then I approached him with this idea and it was like, now, like, let's make this more of a bigger,
like a real thing.
Yeah. Like a more closer to full year round, because bedding plants is only February through June.
Right.
So it's this short,
very intense,
but short, season. And so I thought, well, cut flowers would like dovetail right into bedding plants. I could do that for the summer. Right. Like, and I was just so excited about cuts. And so that's what like,
gotcha,
brought me back into things. And I was like, okay, I'll do both. And then that, but the two things together might substantiate like a career. Like it might be enough to, it just might be enough in all the ways.
Right. And that was how many years ago?
The first full season that I did both things was 2015.
So that was like really right at the beginning or even before cut flowers started to become like a thing on Instagram.
There was no information anywhere. Like there was nothing. And I didn't know. I mean, I knew how to start the seeds, right? Like, cause we had our propagation house, we had our whole system. We have a seeder. We have all of the infrastructure and the knowledge and how to go about figuring out what seeds need what to germinate, blah, blah, blah. But in terms of how to plant it, how to space it, what needs support, what doesn't, like, and being a very visual learner, there's no photos anywhere. There's nothing to look at. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it was, and I started too much. I had to have something of everything. And because I had access to all of the tools, I'm producing like huge quantities of things. And I have like half an acre to grow on. Yeah. So I ended up throwing a ton of plants away. It was like, it was just excessive, but I had no idea. Yeah. You know, I wasn't, and I don't think anybody does say, oh, okay, like this is how many beds I have. This is how many plants I need. Right. They're just like,
there's always that learning curve.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Always. So,
okay, cool. So then that lasted, what did like that preliminary cut run look like for like the first 3, 4, 5 years?
So only field grown
annuals,
because I was pretty connected to like different plug suppliers, you know, looking through catalogs. I, you know, was totally got really happy ordering. So I experimented with a bunch of things, like some first year flowering perennials like delphinium and yarrow, and then just any seed annual thing. And I don't know, we converted one greenhouse to, like, we ripped out the benching and put in ground beds. And like retrofitted it with roll up sides. And I don't remember, that might have been 2017. So like the first two summers, I think it was just outdoor stuff. You know, I ordered roses. I had like one each of all of the dahlia tuber varieties. And I don't even remember where I was getting them from because...
That was a while ago.
You couldn't... But there were also so few options for finding them at that point, other than just, like, ordering the big quantities from the wholesaler. So, I experimented with a bunch of different things. Did mostly, it was just my local florists. I was really trying hard to, like, set up a route, you know, go in a big loop once a week, and the radius of that expanded every year, and I was going farther and farther to different,
and you were the one doing the deliveries.
I had one full-time employee helping me with, you know, like, actual farm management related stuff. I was doing all of the harvesting, all of the packing, obsessing over, like,
every little thing.
All of that, like, doing the delivering. I just really like driving around too, so it was never like
a problem.
I was always like looking forward to getting off of the farm and driving around, and I always saw the value in, and still do, visiting my customers, seeing their businesses, talking to them about what their needs are, because that's where you notice the opportunities. So I tried really hard, and I really liked the idea of, like, focusing on wedding flower varieties and things that didn't ship well, you know, the sort of premium ephemeral things. And, you know, as I kind of saw the instability of and low prices of seed annuals, and just how easy it is to lose things, and the short season, and just, you know, it really didn't pencil out. And so I'm gravitating towards more stuff undercover and more things that, you know, but then that kept me in this pathway of florist sales. So then I can't turn around and really, like, do grocery or do
because it's a different
CSA
product.
Or do farm stand, because really the only thing that had any crossover was Lysianthus, and then everything else was just like, it is, I mean, it's not impossible, but it's hard to cultivate that customer base that appreciates the hummingbird poppies and knows how to treat them, you know, like,
and understands that a cafe is only going to last you 2 days out of a cooler.
And I was never big on, like, because my background was in wholesale, I was always thinking, like, I just need to grow a shitload of this, you know, these couple of things. And then I then that was my model, right? Like, I had worked all kinds of retail jobs and didn't really care for the experience. And, like, even though I feel like I'm good with people, I'm really good one-on-one, and I like having just, like, a handful of clients that I'm taking care of, right? And also it's a business owner to business owner relationship instead of, I was avoiding retail related things. I didn't want to do a CSA. Farmers markets aren't really a thing in my area. Like, there's, I mean, you're talking about driving 2 hours somewhere else,
for to go very small.
Right.
Yeah.
I almost did one season, and then it didn't, you know, it fell by the wayside, and
had other things going on.
Yeah.
Okay. So during that, like, first 5 years, you're finding your groove, figuring out what's working, what's not working.
Yep.
The nursery business is running alongside of this.
Yes.
From a seasonal perspective.
Yep. And the overlap between those two things is really, really hard because, you know, especially if you're trying to grow early spring product, it's very hard to, like, have another product line to move at the same time. Like, we've got this very intense 6-week sales period for bedding plants, like, late April through first week of June. That's really hard because it's like there's so much opportunity to sell the early spring cuts. And sales over the summer, that was another thing I noticed, were just like, I felt like I was grinding so hard to try to push, like, I'm producing this volume of stuff, but it's at the wrong time because nobody needs it. In July and August. So, yeah, the overlap, trying to, like, plant out your field annuals in May when you're also like loading trucks and trying to keep plants watered. It was really hard. And so it was really just something ended up suffering. It was usually cuts because that was like the baby side project.
Yep. And I was going to say, you know, that speed is only sustainable for so long.
Right.
And then and the cogs start to wear off.
Right.
Of the gears.
And so like by like year three, I think I was like, I was so over it. I did not want, I was like, summer is the wrong time.
Yeah.
It's the wrong time for so many reasons, like spring and fall and even winter are when it makes sense to have product. Like, and also with plants requiring what they do from me by June, I am tapped out. Mm-hmm. I need I need a massive recovery after that. Mm-hmm. I cannot think about planting on my hands and knees after I've been, you know, running from one end of the property to the other, like walking 10 to 12 miles a day. You know, it's just too much. It's, and so I started moving towards like, okay, summer break or summer, like it, then it really just morphed into dahlias. It was like, we plant, we just try to get the dahlias out. Yeah. We plant them when we can. If we can get out early into the field in May, we're going to be planting them in between what we have to do to maintain and ship plants. Mm-hmm. And then the dahlias are just sort of on their own.
Yeah.
But they're not going to bloom until September. So like summertime, July, August is really just like weeding. And
And I think it's also important to mention too, like the greenhouses for the nursery side of things were not fitted to be an automatic watering and automatic load in, load out.
No.
That operation was very labor intensive.
Correct? Yes. These structures are very basic. I call them primitive. I mean, they're not, for what they are, they look very like clean and orderly. Like, and you know,
beautiful.
And they're beautiful. They are. I mean, we kept things very tight and clean. But they are still wood frame structures.
Yeah.
There's no real ventilation on them other than opening up the doors and one big exhaust fan that you're really only running like when it's 90 degrees in May. Crucial. You know, you're not using that as your primary ventilation throughout the spring. So just very labor intensive. I couldn't go anywhere. Right. I mean, I probably wasn't going to be like running around doing other things anyway with eight greenhouses, but you know, in spring weather, you're just running around opening and closing doors every time the clouds come and go. So, and then again, no automatic irrigation. There was irrigation for hanging baskets, but for a period of time there, we were actually watering all of the hangers by hand too, because again, it was a system that was installed and it was an electrical. The electrical component to the control box fries in the greenhouses when it's in the summertime and it's 150 degrees in there.
Yeah.
So we needed to rethink that. And we did. We got almost all the houses back onto hanging basket irrigation. But we're still talking about spending 6.5 hours each and every day in the warm part of the spring hand watering. So that's one person's almost entire day.
That's their whole day.
Is just to water. Makes no sense on any level, but that was what I had to work with. And I was very limited in my ability to make large infrastructure changes because this isn't my business. It's my father's business. Yeah. And so if we're going to make an improvement like that, we need to be aligned on, you know, and we hardly ever were. And, you know, he's getting to retirement age and he's thinking about, you know, he's getting ready to sell the business to me. So we're in that in between of he doesn't want to dump more money into it.
Right.
But we're not at the point where I can start making the changes that I see that are necessary. But as each year passes, I'm growing more and more burned out because of how hard we have to work.
Yeah.
And that is with the ultimate end goal of turning around and selling all of this stuff at wholesale, So it's not mathing out because everyone else we're competing with, their cost of production is so much lower.
Right. Because they've been investing.
Right. Exactly. And our business model, like our, at least our business size, I think we're more of, we were really just like this dinosaur. Like we were going extinct. There's no other mid-size wholesale grower. Anybody our size has transitioned to retail because the margins on bedding plants have been so bad for so many years. Yeah. So kind of like other areas of agriculture, you're going to get big or you're going to get out. Like you're either going to keep feeding the beast and getting bigger and doing the things you have to do to remain competitive to all of the different types of wholesale plant buyers.
Right.
Or
you're not.
You're going to do a complete about face and you're going to start, then you're going to start competing with the independent garden centers you used to sell to. Yeah. And then the independent garden centers are in this weird place because they really, they're like bloodthirsty for this high quality product to set themselves apart from the big box store.
Right.
But you can't affect, the grower cannot effectively charge more no matter how good the product looks because that independent garden center has to turn around and compete with the box store. So there's very, there's just not enough flexibility. There's no room anywhere.
Right. So interesting to think about because like I've never been fully engaged or enveloped in the, like the bedding aspect of the nursery industry. Everything I've always either done, been in, whatever, has been in like the cut industry from like a florist perspective or a wholesaler's perspective or like the farm's perspective. So it is very, very interesting to, you know, really dive into, you know, the nursery mindset.
And my whole trajectory in this, even with, like I said, what feels like very primitive structures, I still had access to so many more resources starting out because I had the framework of, you know, greenhouses and trucks and like all of the things you don't think about, like watering tools and seeding tools. And like, I didn't have to figure all of that out. The other side to that though, is that it was sort of like jumping on a freight train that was moving at like breakneck speed. Right? Like it was the fast track, like jump into the deep end sort of way to get. So it's not like it was made in the shade, like, oh, I had my greenhouses and everything was set up and all I had to do was just show up. It was not like that at all. I still had plenty of stuff to figure out and there was so much momentum already existing with just bedding plants. And here I am trying to throw another product line into the mix.
Right.
And it was just chaos. Like it was too much.
Right. And it was too much.
Yeah.
Because it broke.
Yeah.
Like for sure. We had to call it quits.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you want to talk about that?
Yeah. So, okay. So many things going on at the same time, right? Like trying to figure out how to make cuts profitable, even if it's not, I don't think I ever had the intention to make it the main thing. It was just like another thing to do, keep people employed, sort of substantiate ourselves as an employer. Bedding plants, things getting tighter and tighter, being, like I said, limited in the ability to make the necessary infrastructure changes, growing more resentful of just the property, how it's set up, you know, because my parents didn't build the business, build the structures, design everything to do what I'm doing with it, with the two different product lines. They didn't really, they set it up to be temporary, to fulfill that temporary need.
Right.
10, 15 years ago, it was okay to work yourself into the ground for 4 months and you were making enough money in the for that little season. There was no need to do anything else. There's no need to grow poinsettias or mums or any other thing. It was get in and get out. It was good money. There were no big growers to compete with, right? So the houses are set up really unintelligently to rely on this hand scale labor, right? Now we're 15, 20 years in the future, margins are down. We're still doing everything by hand. It's killing us, right? And so the lack of the fact that there had been no evolution of the business keeping up with changing things in the industry, mm-hmm. you start to feel like there's a noose around your neck, right? Because there, because you have not changed incrementally over time. Now I'm looking at things and I'm like, oh my God, everything needs to change.
Yeah.
And it needs to change immediately. Mm-hmm. And if I can't do all of these big changes at once, which is also terrifying,
right?
I'm more terrified of what happens if I don't do these big changes because they're so necessary. Mm-hmm. And then there's the, and then driving that is that personal relationship, that relationship I have with my dad where we're not aligned on the vision for the business. He doesn't want it to get any bigger because it's already so big and bloated, and it feels like we have so few options.
And from like a physicality standpoint,
we can't work any harder than we're working.
You can't work any harder, but you also yeah. can't build many more structures
there. No, we can't. Like
the property is maxed.
Yes, it's completely maxed. Like we have no more flat land.
No.
There's no, and we don't want to be bigger, right? And so then, you know, and it's not like I was thinking, oh, we need to grow more, we need to get bigger. But it was like, we need to start cutting certain things down, yeah. or we need to entirely pivot to retail for plants. Like the need, the impetus for some very extreme change is so palpable for me. Okay. And this is a business that like I've essentially apprenticed in, right? Mm-hmm. I'm molding it and trying to shape it into what I want it to be for mm-hmm. when it is actually mine.
Right.
But then there's that changing of the guard that's not happening. And there's so many reasons for that that we yeah. don't need to get into. But like the short of it is that my father and I could not get to the point where we could actually change the get the business to change hands.
Yeah.
There were just so many loose ends in his life that prevented us from doing that. And so here I am giving everything to this business, running it. I mean, I'm like, yes, my dad's involved in like the delivery end of things and doing like mechanical things around the business, but he's not working. He's not an employee of the business. He's not like doing the majority of the labor for the business.
Right.
And then I'm managing day-to-day operations, client relations, like
the H2A employees.
H2A employees, all of the paperwork that comes with that. I'm yeah. I'm doing the entire crop plan, all of the ordering. I mean, I'm doing everything. I mean, not all, like obviously we have employees doing the transplanting and
yes, and the some and of the physicality the
physical labor. I'm not doing all of that too. There'd be no way, but it's like I'm running the whole business as if it's mine anyway.
Yeah.
But I have all of the responsibility of the owner operator, but none of the rewards. It's like and it's the worst of both worlds,
yeah.
right? Because then it's like I'm trying to keep this business doing what it's always been doing because, you know, obviously my father, who's done this for 25 going on 30 years, like he's very attached to it being a certain way and serving a certain customer. And it's yeah. hard to see that stuff change. It's hard to have someone come in and start making changes.
Right.
All the changes I made, even though they felt really superficial in terms of like, I was really like hungry to do the infrastructure improvements and replan
yeah.
everything because there were no systems when I came into the business. There were no spreadsheets. There was no system for anything. And I built all of those mm-hmm. to the best that I could. But underpinning that is that hand scale labor
right.
that's killing us. And we need to think bigger
yeah.
to get ourselves out of that. So, you know, there was in 2020, things kind of came to a head, you know, and my dad and I threatened to quit in 2020 because I was so fried, you know, and my dad and I were just like, he's stressed out. He's running his landscape business, which is a whole other thing, right? And it's just too much. Like, we're both people that do too much and take on too much and like very ambitious, driven, like, But you're when you're so in it, and my whole thing is like, I want to zoom out and I want to look big picture, but my dad is so in the weeds that like we can't, you know, and the thought of like doing these infrastructure improvements that I'm talking about, I mean, it's like terrifying to him, right? Because yeah. he's so maxed. Yes. Again, another very valuable lesson in like you cannot be the person doing everything in your business because you're in this perpetual burnout that just bleeds, you know, 1 year bleeds into the next. And it's like you just can't ever relax.
Yes.
And when you can't relax, you can't think of creative solutions to things.
Yes.
It feels just like you have a noose around your neck. And yes. that's exactly what it was for both of us. We're both unhappy. We both don't like how things are. But it feels like we can't set it down. Like the business, the momentum that is behind the business has to be maintained. We can't disappoint any customers. We can't stop doing what we're doing. And I start to feel in 2020 like I can't see a way out. And like the business is never going to be mine. The changes that need to happen, it feels like I'm never going to get to the point where I can make them because they feel so overdue. And I'm wondering about the whole future of the business in general, if it's even worth having.
Yeah.
Because it just feels like we're so behind.
Right.
So things came to a head in 2020. We, you know, agreed that we needed to get, you know, we really needed to get the business changed hands. Like we needed to formally succeed the business to me and take it off of his plate so that I could then take on the risk of the money required, you know.
Yeah. And this is all in 2020 still?
Fall of 2020.
Okay.
Into, and I already had the crop plan for 2021. Like everything was ordered.
Right.
Right. So like I'm threatening to quit in 2020, but I already have everything ordered and I'm very emotionally invested in what I've just created for the 21 season.
And this is also something that you have emotional investment in from
business perspective. Because I have nothing but sweat equity into this business.
And you have grown up in
the right. I've grown up life. In this business. I'm very emotionally attached to it, right? Yeah. Like I wanna be there. I just wanna be able to do it on my terms.
Yeah.
My dad is ultimately very fearful of me like going too far with it and not wanting me to dump money into it. So when I'm talking about these infrastructure changes, it's like we're talking about taking out substantial loans to do this. And he's like, no, just stay small. And then I say, well, okay, but if we stay small, this isn't making enough to live on.
No.
And it doesn't make sense to do. So you're in this really, really sticky place.
Yes.
Where and you're just so stressed out, you can't really think of what the solution is. It just feels like either we do it or we don't.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't feel like we can pivot and let things flow from there. It's like I see now that things really just needed to come to a screeching halt. And that's exactly what happened. Like we agreed that we were going to work on a plan to succeed the business in fall of 2020. I went through, you know, the 21 season growing, bedding plants, cuts, all of that. And it was, and then things sort of came to a head in the middle of greenhouse season again, like 6 months later, like April 21.
April is like,
I mean,
it's do or die.
We're like, we're loaded. We've got 8 houses full of product.
Yep.
This is also a year into COVID. Plant sales are insane. Demand is insane. We can't grow enough. I have stuff packed so tight in these houses. Like it's a crime, but we sold everything. It was like, it just felt like there was so much pressure, but in a good way. It was like, we're just going to make a pile of money this year, and that's going to feel really good because there have been bad years in the past. But you know, my dad and I had another little like thing, and it was just, again, it was really just driven by stress. It wasn't really about what we're talking about, right? But I just had this moment where I was like, yep, I'm done. Like, and I was really ready to just totally wash my hands of it in April and walk away because this is, I mean, I'm like, I am.
We're over it.
I'm over it. But I knew if I left, I've got, I mean, a couple dozen clients that I have these relationships with that I'm disappointing.
Yeah.
And then that's something that I, like, if I want to work in this industry again, I can't recover from. Because
right.
I've taken orders and I've promised things and I've custom grown material.
Yeah.
It's all sitting on the bench. And if I walk away, I mean, I'm the only one that knows what's going on there. If I right. walk away,
everything dies.
Everything dies, you know, and I'm not that petty. Like, I'm not going to do that. But that's where I was at mentally. So I get through bedding plant season. We sell everything. You know, we do what we need to do. And then, you know, I took a vacation in the summer and essentially just spent time mulling over my options. But, you know, I knew that I needed to just be done. So that's what I ended up doing in 2021.
Yep. So you made it through plant season in 2021.
Made it through bedding plant season. We had just dahlias planted in the field. We spent the summer maintaining those, and I did, you know, I sold a bit to my florists in September, but I also formally quit in September.
Yeah.
And I spent the entire summer sort of building up to doing that, and
yeah.
I wrote everything out in like a really long letter, and I left it on my dad's desk, and I was like, you know, and it was not like an angry, mean thing. It was just this very heartfelt,
I need you to know.
Sincere, you know, hey, like, I hate that I feel like I have to do this, but we have had so many conversations and, you know, you're just not hearing me. And like, this is not worthwhile for me. It's not paying me anything I can live on. You know, my life is propped up by, you know, various things. And even
by this dream.
Right. Right. And I can't keep waiting to live my life, like to actually start building what I want to build,
yeah.
because I'm waiting for you to come around
yeah.
to this idea that, you know, it's going to be mine. And like, so I'm sorry, but just like, you know, and when I left, I mean, I had everything tied off. Like, I tied off all the loose ends.
Yeah.
I let our customers know, like, I made sure all of the bills were paid. Like, there was no, and at the time, I think he took it as like, I shut everything down without consulting him, but there was no, because again, we're in COVID, so it's already too late to order product for next year.
Right.
You're
left with whatever's left.
I had let point. Our employees know, like, hey, I'm not going to be here next year. And none of them wanted to be there without me.
Yeah.
So there was no one to work there. There was nowhere to get supplies. Like, there was no way the business was going to run. And that's like a lot to digest.
Yeah.
For my dad. And so it took some time for us to like be able to get to the point where we could talk about everything.
Yeah.
But it ultimately ended up being a positive. It was a positive for me. I had stuff in my personal life that I had to attend to.
Yeah.
Like, because again, farm life, right? I'm living and dying by that business, not maintaining any of my personal relationships, not taking care of myself at all. And I'm overdue for all of that. And so that's exactly what I did. And then my dad got to experience what it's like to just not have a second business running. And that was a net positive for him as well. He yeah. never would have chosen that.
Right.
Because he felt so the pressure of needing to just uphold everything he had created.
Yeah.
But it was the best thing.
Did he ever come out and say that it was a positive for him?
No.
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 Okay.
No, he didn't. And he definitely toyed with the idea of trying to keep going with it. And I, you know, I shared just all of the facts, like all of the numbers, everything with him. I had been right along, but he had a hard time hearing it. I think because he just didn't want the business to be in this position. Like, he wanted it to be profitable. He wanted it to work.
Yeah.
And that he was trying to accomplish that by just sheer force of will.
Yeah.
And so when he toyed with the idea of continuing to just satisfy one customer, and I would just explain to him that, like, you can't just grow for one customer. It's not going to work out.
Yeah.
Not at these prices and not under these terms where, like, you're growing all of this product on spec, and then you're opening it up for open inventory, and then you sell what you sell. Like, yeah. That's how this is done. So if you're only growing for one customer, guess what? They have all of the power.
Yeah.
And
that's the scary part about like any one-on-one relationship. Right.
And I think he actually did hear me, and because he had so many other things going on in his life, he just had other things to deal with too. And so figuring out like keeping the greenhouses going was just not
going to happen.
Not going to happen. So I do think it was.
Yeah. So all good things come to an end.
Right.
Whether they're on good terms or not.
Right.
Which I feel like the terms aren't bad.
No, right they're now. Not.
And sometimes that storybook opens again.
Right.
And I think that's kind of where we find ourselves now.
Right. So I completely stopped thinking about plants, flowers, greenhouses, running a business for like a good year and a half. I had other things going on, like other things I'm dealing with. Mm-hmm. But I'm not even thinking about having a career or being a business owner anymore. I'm not keeping up with the industry. I don't know. You know, I completely just shut everything off, and it was the best thing that I ever did. Mm-hmm. But like the greenhouses are sitting there empty. They're there. My dad really wants me to be there and wants me to be doing something with it. Mm-hmm. But now everything is just silent, right? So we don't have the noise of like bedding plants, customer expectations, all of that, right? And so I still have all of my dahlia tubers that had been saved.
That you have been collecting and cultivating.
For like the last, you know, the entire time, right?
Almost I've got, 10 years now.
Yes. I've got pallets worth of, you know.
Material.
Yeah. And I know what they're worth, so I can't part with them. But I'm also, like, not so keen on just planting them out into the field anymore because, like, it's really hard to grow good dahlias outside in our area. And, you know, so I've got all of that. And then you come visit me in January of 23.
Here we are.
And then we start talking about like rooted cutting production.
Mm-hmm. So the other night we were out to dinner and Megan says something along the lines of, why are you showing me all of this? Why are you telling me all of this in relation to, you know, how we do
sharing your secret sauce with me? Like, just
why am I doing that?
Right.
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 And I told her very, very heartfeltly from a very heartfelt perspective, if there is someone in this industry who I feel is competent, reliable, passionate, etc., and who I want to be, you know, sharing a part of the industry with, I need to make sure that that person is legit. And that's exactly what you've built. You've done your whole life. It's who you are. You care very deeply for the product and the industry. And that has shown. So I basically want to have another person, another company, another business in the industry who can start to produce on a larger scale and volume than we can here at our farm product that is in demand.
Right.
Because you have, Megan currently has access to 6 greenhouses with benches.
7.
7 greenhouses with benches.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have that here.
Yeah.
So Megan has this amazing infrastructure opportunity to do some really big waves.
Yeah. Like, and also it's this specific setup, right, where these structures are set up to be just spring structures. They're not year-round greenhouses. Yes, they're heated, but there's no real good
Summer ventilation.
So we're talking about, like, they're great if you want to have stuff in them between February and June.
Yeah.
Like, that's what they were designed for.
Yep. So then we start having the conversation of, you know, the specifics of dahlia cutting propagation.
Right.
And, like, the volumes you need of
mother
tubers.
And that's stuff that I had been doing for myself anyway for years. Like, I'm producing and had been producing rooted dahlia cuttings
Yeah.
for years. And I didn't wasn't selling the excess I had, you know, because I didn't have the time. I didn't have the manpower.
Yep.
But like, I've been propagating dahlias that way for years because I think cuttings are superior to tubers, you know,
for many different reasons.
For many different reasons. So
of the like of easier to transplant.
Right.
Easier to move.
Flowering sooner.
Flowering quicker, which I think is something that not everybody realizes.
Right. They flower.
That plant is already in vegetative state when it goes
actively
in the ground.
Actively growing. It doesn't need to wake up. Yep. So you're getting flowers 2 weeks earlier, which is so crucial in a northern climate with a short season. Like 2 weeks is a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I had been doing that for myself. I had always had extra that, you know, I'm just giving to other like friends in the area or, you know, but I can't get into shipping anything because it's just, I'm at capacity, right?
At the time you were.
At the time. Yeah.
So now we start talking about something new.
Right.
Which has kind of led into a brand name that will soon be coming live of Puddle Jump Plant Company.
Right.
Or Puddle Jump Plants.
Yeah.
Where did the name come from?
So the genesis of the name, when I was 14, I started looking for a 4-H project horse or a horse I could show, and tried out a bunch of different, you know, I'm looking for like a year, only looking at geldings, because mares can be
a bit much.
They can be mean and big attitude. And when you're, you know, it's not always ideal for kids and intermediates, beginners and intermediates. And then so in, I'm looking and looking and not finding anything. And then right in my backyard, like a town like 20-30 minutes from me, is a mare for sale. And I wasn't going to go look at her because she was a mare and I had just kind of written off the idea. And I had had some bad experiences with some mares, mare lesson horses. And then the owner was had just graduated from high school and was going to college and needed to sell a couple animals, you know, because she wasn't going to be around. And this horse had been a lesson horse and they were just like, no, you need to come see her. Like, she's really, really special. You just come see her. Like,
okay.
And then like, it's instant fall in love,
of course,
you know, like instantly, like she's perfect. And she's like the nicest mare that you're ever going to hope to meet, like just wonderful, kind, honest horse. So I take her for a 30-day trial and it's like, she's outside of our price range, but my parents set up a payment plan with them. It's like, this is just like, there is no other horse, left on earth, I guess. So, her registered name, she's Morgan, her registered name was Mill Mars Dancing Puddles, which even in like horse world terms, that's a really strange name. Okay. I don't know where it comes from because the person I got her from was already like the second or third owner. But Puddles for short.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had her for 14 years.
Wow.
We were the same age.
Okay.
So
yep.
We were both born in 92.
Yeah.
So, but in horse years at 14 or 15, she's already at midlife,
yeah,
you know, right. And like, she's been around the block and she was just like this super solid, you know, and I did everything with her. Like,
yep.
All my Went teenage years.
Yeah.
All, I mean, I rode her all around the town, up, you know, through the woods, trail riding. We showed all around New England. Like, you know, we did everything. And I could do anything to or with that horse. Like, she was the best.
Yep.
So.
Ready to go. And your personal Instagram handle is?
Puddle Jumper.
Puddle Jumper.
Yeah.
Okay. Because of the horses.
Yeah. Name. And I was never really much of a jumper, like, other than just, like, tooling around. We were not, like, actual hunter jumper. but she had a lot of spunk and a lot of get up and go and, like, once I broke her out of like the lesson horse mentality of just going around in a circle, three different gates, like we started galloping down the road and up through the trails and the woods in our area. And she just loved it. Mm-hmm. Like she was so game for anything and she will be the best
forever.
The best horse I've ever had. Like, there's never going to be.
So it's definitely like a meaningful, heartfelt name term.
Yeah.
And then we're turning that into something that's truly yours now.
Yeah, we're just rolling that into...
No longer is the business running under something that was built by someone else.
Right.
This is a new gig. This is Megan's gig.
And and it's hard because like there's so much attached to like my family business and the Gilsom Gardens name, and you know, it's not that, and I never wanted to be the reason that all came to a halt, but at the same time, I'm such a creative person and maybe even like too much of a control freak, but I want to feel like something is mine.
Yeah.
And so, and it doesn't, it because it just feels better, because then I feel like I can own it, like good or bad or ugly, whatever, you know, it's just mine.
So fantastic.
Yeah.
So what this looks like from here is Puddle Jump Plant Company, or Puddle Jump Plants, PJP. We'll go for short.
PJP Co.
is doing a late spring launch this year.
So we're going to do a late spring launch of rooted dahlia liners, cuttings. And that's just based off of that's going to be produced from my existing stock of, you know,
things that you've collected and cultivated for years.
Right. Yep. And I've, you know, secured a bunch of more varieties. So we're going to have like double the stuff for next year. But for this year, we're sticking to dahlias, and we're sticking to what we have.
Yep.
And, we're locked and loaded. Like, we've
started taking cuttings.
We've got all our trays filled. We've got a greenhouse turned on.
Yep.
Everything is going. So, and that's going to be...
And these will be shipped?
These will be shipped out.
To growers within the United States.
Correct.
Anyone will have access to them, which is very exciting.
Yeah.
So you've also got to kind of see and experience a part of that here since you've been here this week.
Right.
And what will be available for product is what is physically growing in your structures.
So we are not pre-selling anything. Right. We will load inventory on the website, which is to be determined.
To be made yet.
It will be serviceable.
Yep.
And if things go well, you know, I think we'll move into at least doing part of our sales as pre-sale in the fall. We're like gathering some data. I never really kept I didn't really keep good data on my own personal cutting production because I wasn't, you know, in the past, because I wasn't selling any of it. So just using it for myself, and the extra was just extra, but I need the data points this year to know, you know, what I'm going to get, you know, compare varieties to one another. That way I'll be able to use that to inform what we do in successive seasons, springs.
Yeah.
So, and that will allow us to pre-sell.
Fantastic.
Thanks.
Yay.
Yeah.
So sticking with dahlias for a few seasons.
Yep. Dahlias definitely for this season. Yep. And then
potentially opening it up to other things.
Right. You know, there's other things out there that are high in demand and hard to find, and especially in small quantities for the smaller grower who can't bite off a tray of 50 or a tray of 100.
Right. Wonderful. Fantastic. I'm so excited for you.
It's really good to be growing again, have my hands in the dirt.
Yeah.
It's really like the greenhouse is just like where I belong, and so it's been great to be back.
Yes.
And it will be great to serve a wider
audience. Yes.
Yes. Not being limited to just selling locally, even though we will do that too. We will do that in addition to shipping, you know, taking on the process of shipping out plants was just something I just couldn't do with how tied up I was in other things.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to learn about that and use like my foundation of just plant propagation, but be able to offer that to a wider audience with the ability to ship.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think the, you know, from an industry perspective, we're at such a point where we need more support
people. Right.
We need more propagators. We need more growers.
Right.
Because everything is selling out.
Right.
Regardless of where it's coming from.
Now. Right. And so. I happen to have like a wealth of propagation space that's just very, it's ready to do this specific job.
Yeah.
And that sort of creative solution was not something that I would have seen. I mean, like, I knew the demand was there before. Like, I know what a tray of Rock Run Ashley dahlia cuttings is worth, right? But it's actually just really refreshing to be at the beginning of something instead of taking something existing and trying to shape it. It's like, now I'm starting from the beginning, so I'm making intentional choices about...
Yeah.
And I like to get specific, right? Because I have really high standards. I have high standards for everything, right? Like, really perfectionist about like what my plants look like and how they behave and perform, like really, really specific about what I personally like to spend my time doing and what kind of customer I like to, like, I like to get specific, because I have a really low tolerance for frustration. Just really, really low, because life is just so short. Right. Like, it's so short. If you're going to be a business owner, you get to choose. Like,
you do.
Everything is up to you, and that's actually the best thing.
Right.
So many other business owners I know are imprisoned by their businesses.
Right.
They are slaves to their businesses. They're doing things that don't serve them. They know it.
Right.
They're exhausted.
Yeah.
They're burnt out, right? But they feel like they can't change. Mm-hmm. And like, what's scarier to me is staying the same. Like, if something's not working, change it up.
Right.
Try something new, even and even on a small scale. Just switch things up.
Yeah.
Because when things get stagnant, that's when things, there's just so much resistance.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So it's great to just feel like I have options now, and like, I can kind of like, I don't, like I said, I get really specific about things. So the choices I make, like, other people watching are like, well, why are you going to do things that way? Or why would you not also do this thing? And it's like, no, I just want to do the parts that I like, and I actually can, because I'm in control here. I'm in charge.
Yes.
Like, this is not running me. I'm running this.
Right. So it's huge to have that mindset, that thought process, absolutely,
right,
in conjunction with this, or that path of thought, also understanding that it takes time to develop an existing clientele base
for sure
for this. Because this is our fourth year shipping cuttings, rooted cuttings, and I mean, there's still so much for us to perfect, get better on, adjust.
Mm-hmm.
We can sell more product, we can produce more product. So it's always this like evolution of, you know, constantly getting better over the years, you know, as time moves on. Whether that's with, you know, more or different or better staff or hiring admin.
There's
help.
Always something to fine tune.
Always.
Yeah. That always, process always. Is never ending.
Yeah.
But that's like, that can be really, really fun and interesting
and incredibly rewarding too.
Yeah Because the end goal, right, is to make sure that end consumer is having the best possible experience with what they are buying from you.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. And their interactions and
their
emotional tie to
to
money,
right,
and the purchasing process, and
right,
what they're receiving, and
right,
all of it.
Yeah,
absolutely. Okay, so Miss Puddle Jump Plant Co. will be able to find you on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
You'll have a website up and running by mid-April.
Yep.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
They should follow you on your Instagram, which I'll have linked in the description for this episode.
Yep, my personal account.
Yep, we'll have your personal account. And then
there'll be a business one coming soon.
Yes, absolutely.
Yep.
And then once that's live, I'll be sure to share it on our channels too. So
awesome.
people can find you, because we need more people in the industry to make all this happen.
Yeah. So plant people.
You got it. Well, Megan, thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me, Drew.
This week. Absolutely. It's been a lot of fun. It's been great to see you again. Yeah,
it's been great.
Like I said, if you want to learn more about Megan and what she's got going on in her life and business, etc., those links will be in the description for this podcast episode. And we'll be sure to share once everything is up and rolling and the purchasing processes are in place and all of the above. So you can support Megan and Pedal Jump Plant Company and Puddle.
Yeah.
Puddle Jump Plant Company. Mm-hmm. And all of the things that go along with that. So thanks for being here. Thank you, Megan.
Thank you, Drew.
Absolutely. And we'll talk to you soon. Bye.